Welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you joining me. Time to go up the down staircase, kids, in the outdoor, try to make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. All right, back at it one more time here on the platform that I use to attempt to uplift, inspire, inform, and entertain. If I could do it all in one podcast, one show, then I've hit the marks. But I'm not really sure if that ever actually happens. Sometimes I go back, especially when I'm producing these shows and cleaning them up for time and restarts, etc., if I ever get to that point. Sometimes I got to say that it sounds like I am a madman rambling on and on and on. And other times I thought, well, there was a pretty good point. And to be, you know, totally honest and totally open and full disclosure, this is one of those podcasts that could go either way. I have zero net in front of me today, just a microphone and my thoughts. And it's been an interesting week, depending on how you look at it. But it's always an interesting week, depending on how you look at it, isn't it? Isn't perspective really the linchpin, the cornerstone of life in so many different ways? You know, the attacks in Afghanistan made headlines this past week, which, of course, ignites a firestorm of politics on both sides of the fence. And we are so quick, so quick to have knee-jerk reactions to just about everything. And to me, because I've been in the media for going on 25 years now, I'm on the other side of the microphone. I'm on the side of the media where I am less of a consumer and more of a provider. And so I know what it's like to be on this side, and I've watched television behind the scenes, news behind the scenes, radio for sure behind the scenes, a quarter of a century, and all the things that you don't know, I do know. And how, of course, you know it's about ratings, so how they get you to stick to this stuff and to get your attention and keep it is all about the dollars for the advertising. This show is really, in some ways, no different, right? So when I started this in 2017, the rally cry that I came out with as podcasting was starting to really become something was, you know, to have people support the show financially, because this is part of my work. It's no different than what you do for your work. It just comes from a different source. And so I was very lucky in the fact that I'd been on the radio for a long time and people knew who I am already, and that helped. And so in the beginning, there was a fairly quick outpouring of sponsorships that came from people listening that are, to this day, are still, you know, sponsors and subscribers to the show. Now, that number's dwindled over time, just like every other medium, but I continue doing it because I don't get behind a microphone for what I get out of it, but maybe what I can put into it, which is a little bit of my salvation on my end of the deal, because life wears on me too. And talking this out to an unknown, unseen audience, oddly enough, helps me. It's like my own therapy at times. So while I am talking into this microphone and you're going to be listening to whatever comes out at the other end all over the world, literally, it is a thing I think we kind of do together. And so for me, I try to bring as much perspective as I can to my life, which means stepping back at times. A few words that popped in my head early this morning. So in full disclosure, it's just 7 a.m. here in Chicago. It's going to be a very hot, well over 90 degree day. I'm in my studio before I lock everything down with the air conditioning in here. I have the windows open. It is my favorite time of the day. I've been up since 4:30 working on a couple things. The coffee's on. It's quiet. And I can hear the sounds of the day starting. And I'm sitting here in the dark about an hour ago, and the crickets are still doing their thing from last night. And as the sun began to rise, the crickets are still doing their thing, which is, you know, the sound of crickets was always an early evening thing to me, but it's getting later in the summer. And the sounds of summer change as time goes on. And so I'm listening to these crickets last night before I hit the sack, and they're here to wake me up this morning. And I just had this thought about how much I enjoy that sound, just the sound of crickets at night and in the morning. And if I juxtaposition the sound of those crickets to all the shit that's going on in the news that's going to attempt to get my attention today, it's easy to let the chaos of life erode from the joy of being alive. And that comes right out of the loss of a good friend of mine last Saturday, a week ago. when I got the call that a fellow that I served with in the Coast Guard, he was a pilot, he's an amazing pilot, an amazing guy, had passed away from complications of COVID. And leaving all my thoughts aside about all of that, I'm focused not less on how he died, but how he lived. And boy, did he live. Rusty Muncy was my lieutenant in the Coast Guard for 4 years. And he was just, he came from, you know, this old school Southern hospitality, Southern class, a fairly religious man, incredible family man, great husband, who never once pushed his religion on me, but lived his mantra, his belief that you treat everybody the same, that you reach out to people, that it's not about what you say, it's what you do. And I always felt included in his family, with his wife Susan and his three daughters. And I just had such great memories of Rusty, and we've stayed in touch 41 years, all this time since I got out in 1984. And he has been one of the mainstays over these decades. When my life was upside down or right side up, he was there to talk about it. And the same with him. He would call me when he just wanted to chat about things. And, you know, we're all going to die, but we all don't live. And Rusty sure lived. I don't know how many millions of hours he spent in helicopters over the years. Matter of fact, it's kind of funny. 2016, 15, somewhere in there. My time at Oprah Radio had come and gone. My time at WGN Radio in Chicago had come and gone. And I was in the middle of kind of figure things out. And I got a call from Rusty one day, who was now flying, I don't know, $45 million helicopters for some company out of Detroit. But he was living in Florida or Louisiana at the time. I can't remember which one. And he was flying suits, as we call them, executives, out to the oil platforms and other things, making serious coin. And good for him. He deserves it. He's just an incredible pilot, the kind of guy you just want to be in the aircraft with. So he called me and says, and now listen, I'm going to try and do an imitation of him in his memory, and it makes me laugh whenever I think about it, because he had this Southern drawl. And, you know, my nickname most of my life has been Augie, and most people know me as that, and I can kind of tell how people know me, actually, depending on the nickname they use or the name they use. So when I was a little kid, it was Butch, and that kind of carried just a little bit over into high school, and then it became Augie for the rest of the time. And then, of course, later in life, now I'm John, you know, because I write books and I get on the radio, right? So it's all very interesting to me. But Rusty knew me as Augie, but he never once said it that way. His drawl had him saying, Augie, like A-W-W-W-G-E-E, Augie. And I loved it. And I loved him. And every time we talked, it just went through me. This good, good man. That I found so much value in his friendship. So he calls me back in 2014, 15, 16, somewhere in there. And he says, you know, I'm flying these helicopters, Augie. And he says, I'd like to try and get you on as a crew member for my team. And I thought, well, that just would be the shits, wouldn't it? So he asked him if I could still swim and do whatever. I said, absolutely. So here I was in my middle 50s, trying to get back into some kind of shape to see if I can latch on one more time with my lieutenant. And I got back in the pool, and I was swimming my laps, and I was running and doing the things I needed to do that weren't specifically associated with the weight room. And I called the company and talked to the people, and it was very promising. And I thought, boy, this is great, because it was like a 2 week on, 2 week off gig. It was serious money. And I'd be there in a heartbeat. To work with him, I'd be there in a heartbeat. I'd be there yesterday. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. I think the company was sold not long after that, and things changed. But a friend of mine, Bob Lyons, who I was in the service with, I believe flew with Rusty later. So that was very cool for Bob. And it just made it even more difficult to get the call that he had passed, because of the times we shared together way back then and, of course, over the years. But it reminded me, once again, that tomorrow's promised to no one. Matter of fact, later today isn't even promised to any of us, myself included. And that the clock is ticking, and it's always later than we think, because we don't know our expiration date. We don't know our expiration date. We all know the day we got here. We know the frickin' time, day, and moment we got here. There's a piece of paper that says when we got here. We do not have a piece of paper that says we're leaving until after we've left. And then it says everything that the birth certificate says in reverse. And so, once again, when somebody close to me passes, I am reminded about how important it is to stay alive until I die. And that I do whatever I can do, whatever I feel is my inclination to do, to serve, to pay rent for the space I take up on the planet. You know, I've told my kids, I don't want any big funerals. I don't want a bunch of people standing around mourning. I mean, I get there's a place for that. I don't want to be in a box in the ground taking up. I've already taken up enough space here. You know, my wishes have already been made, but it's not in that direction. So with Rusty's passing and then, of course, the chaos of this past week, it's easy to lose sight of the fact that life's a pretty good deal. So on this early Saturday morning, as the sun is now filling my office and it's warming up in here big time, it's kind of like a sauna, a little bit, not a lot of it, just a little bit. I'm thinking of my friend. There's a picture not too far away of us at Coast Guard Air Station Chicago in 1983. It's the whole crew, and there's a big HH-52A helicopter there, and we're all kneeling or standing, and most of the officers are at the nose of the helicopter. You can tell by their shirts and what they're wearing, and most of us enlisted were at the other end of the helicopter, which kind of says it all at the ass end. But my friend and my lieutenant, Rusty Muncy, was kneeling right next to me in that picture. He's the only officer right among the enlisted guys. And I think that says a hell of a lot about him and who he was and who he always will be to me. August 4th of 2020 was the 230th anniversary or birthday of the United States Coast Guard, which started as the Revenue Cutter Service in 1790. And I did a two-part podcast with the shipmates and crewmates that I spent the most time with my 4 years at Coast Guard Air Station Chicago. And it was such a thrill for me and so much fun to talk to some of the best people I know who do some of the best work in the world that I've ever seen. And of course, Rusty Muncy was one of them. And it sounded like this.
Well, there were two experiences up there in Chicago. One when I had the ditch with Captain Corson, and then there was another one when that helicopter went down with all of the vice presidents of a company, and Rod Leland and I were flying. And what he did was really marvelous in that you think about how you're doing things, because he called control and asked them if anybody had seen an oil slick. Well, I was too young to realize that as far as aviation goes. And some airliner said, I saw an oil slick, and gave the position, and we went there, and there was the guys floating in a boat.
They hadn't. It hadn't even been called in or anything?
Oh, yeah, they had called Mayday, but it was getting dark, and we couldn't see to do anything. And that one jetliner that reported he saw the oil slick was the key to getting those people out of the water.
Wow. And Rod Leland, you know, left way too soon. He was an incredible guy. Imagine flying with him must have been always a treat.
It was, because he had all the experience and the knowledge, and he was always calm. So
yeah,
he taught you to be calm too. So it was really great.
I always tell people in these conversations we've had, you know, if you look at Top Gun, like Steve Zimek was Tom Cruise, and Rod Leland would be like another one of the pilots. Those two guys, most and next to you, stand out in my memory of, like, if you had to get in the helo, those are the guys you want to be with.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's right. I can't help it. I can't help it. I'm sorry. That's right, Augie. Talk about that. I know I already heard this yesterday, but you got to expand on that thing with Captain Corson about having to ditch.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, we were flying out to do some training, and our guy, crewman in the back, he said, well, actually, he didn't say anything. The captain, I said, man, do you smell that? And I said, yeah, I smell something burning. And the guy in the back, he said, there's oil going all over everywhere back here. So what happened was a quick disconnect for the transmission came loose and dumped all the transmission fluid. So we were 1,000 feet, so I made a mayday call on FM, UHF, and single sideband, and we ditched in the water there. And they came out that evening because they came out and picked us up. The other helicopter was down, so they had to come out in a boat, and they towed the 52 back into the lifeboat station in South Chicago. And then the next day, they put a transmission in it and flew it home.
You know, I just, for full disclosure, we remembered yesterday when we were talking off the air that the guy in the back that was saying, there's oil everywhere, that was the that was the one and only, the armadillo from Texas, Lonnie Shear.
That's right. That's
Man,
who it was.
He was a trip. This is the only guy I ever saw walking around the hangar deck with a flight suit on and cowboy boots.
Yeah. He was a character.
Over a period of time, you were kind of pushing me. You know, hey Algie, there's an opening at OCS. Why don't you go become a pilot? You remember this stuff? Pushing me a little bit.
Yeah.
So I never.
That's because you were gung ho and you were always there and you always did a great job. That's the kind of people you want.
Well,
in the cockpit with you.
And then so that happened more than once. And the one time that I remember the most, I don't know where we were going, what was going on, but I do know that there was some sort of something going up in Wisconsin, like a ski trip for that some of the crew had gone on this ski trip. I got in the seat and we're flying along, and I don't remember who was in the back, but you said let's go check on those guys, and we're going up Route 12, and you said, now I don't know if you remember this, it's vivid to me, Rusty. You said, here, why don't you fly for a while? I go, well, what? And so I had my hand in the collective, and I'm just sitting there, and he's like, just take it easy. It's kind of like balancing a poo ball on a needle. Terrific. So we're going along, and all you said was, you dropped a little bit, about 300 feet. I'll take it from here. So, but you know, that was such a great memory for me. And I think about it, and
actually, what had happened? They went to Iron Mountain. Where they went.
That's what it was. You're right.
They went to Iron Mountain, and what had happened was I volunteered to be the chairman of the Navy committee for, you know, doing all of the trips and being able to do things, and by doing that, then I was able to get stuff for the Coast Guard, and what we did is we got the Navy bus to take everybody up to the Iron Mountain.
So you remember
that. So that's how that happened.
Iron Mountain, okay. And all I remember is we were going up Route 12, and I'm like, what do we follow? You said, well, you just follow that road down there. What? Anyway.
Well, you know, that helicopter only had one engine, so yeah. He wanted to stay close to the road, so he had to auto-rotate. He had a place to go.
That's right. But you almost had me at that one. I was really close. I came out, I thought, well, if he could do this, I could do this. And I don't even remember what year it was, but my life was supposed to go in a different direction. But, you know, one of the great joys is our friendship over the years. I mean, I just think the world of you and Susan, you're just an unforgettable character and friend in my life, and I thank you for that.
Well, I do the same. That's why we stay in touch with each other, because I mean, you came over to my house as Santa Claus and treated my kids well. So every Christmas while we were there, we had Santa Claus come over and hand my girls gifts. Yeah.
Well, listen, it's always good to talk to you, and I appreciate you chiming in on this. I not just to remember and spend time with the people that were there, but also to let people know who weren't there, you know, kind of what it was like and how important the 5th Military Branch is. So thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Augie. Appreciate it.
All right.
Always good to hear from you.
So this is just a reminder on this Saturday that life is short. There's no guarantees that you'll be here tomorrow or later today. And that what you invest in is where you get your return on investment. And you got to watch what that is. In closing this episode of The Bridge, I'm reminded of a song by my friend John Barry called The Richest Man. And as I think back on my friend Rusty Muncy, who for more than 40 years was that guy, perhaps not materially, but spiritually and certainly with his family, he was the richest man that I ever knew, and I will miss him terribly. Thanks for listening. Until next time, safe travels. Adios. Thank you.
100-foot yacht he loved to show off. Had the whole wide world at his beck and call. Yeah, I knew a man thought he had it all. But the richest man I ever knew made a living with his hands. Wore a $13 pair of boots, sporting a farmer's tan. Early in the morning, I'd hear him loading up his tools. And in a rusty old Chevy, I'd ride to school. Richest man I ever knew. I knew a man thought he had it all. Built a big house with a 10-foot wall. And though his friends were mostly bald, still thought he had it all. But the richest man I ever knew lived behind a picket fence. He met my mom at 22. They could barely pay the rent. After dinner at the diner, he tipped more than he could afford. And on the way back home, I'd sit next to richest man I ever knew. I knew a man thought he had it all. Drew his final breath last fall. Well, the nurse didn't quite know who to call for the man who thought he had it all. But the richest man I ever knew filled the old stone church. And the stories that we listened to told what his life was worth. He went to meet his maker in his only Sunday suit. On the day that I said goodbye to man I ever knew. Someday again I'll sit next to the richest man I ever knew.